Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer. SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting.
Than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience.
With Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
Yeah. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Live from the palatial yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Infinity Sports Network here in beautiful New York City, sitting on top of the 10th floor, 345 Hudson Street. Welcome on in to another week and a Monday edition of the Zach Gelb Show across all the great local Infinity Sports Network affiliates, Sirius XM, Channel 375, the free Odyssey app, and as always, streaming on YouTube. 888-710-4ISN is the number to jump on in. That's 888-710-4476. You could always get at me on Instagram, where I'm straight flexing, or via the good old cesspool of Twitter, at Zach Gelb. That's Z-A-C-H-G-E-L-B. Stephon Marbury going to join us in studio an hour from now, so make sure you stick around for that at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific time. It'll be great to have Steph in studio today. And we're coming off what was a wild, and I mean a wild, sports weekend. We had the Final Four set in the NBA. Tomorrow night, you will have the Oklahoma City Thunder go up against the Minnesota Timberwolves in the Western Conference Finals. And then on Wednesday at Madison Square Garden, the Mecca, right, the world's most famous arena, you will have the New York Knicks, who said goodbye to the Boston Celtics in six, go up against the Indiana Pacers with the man who's very disrespected, and he isn't overrated, in Tyrese Halliburton. And that's only the beginnings of it. We had the craziness with Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark over the weekend. Rory McIlroy embarrassed himself, I thought, at the PGA Championship. Scottie Scheffler won another major championship, his third, his first non-major championship, or his first major championship that was not a green jacket at Augusta. And death taxes and a big game where the Maple Leafs lose as they've lost now seven straight game sevens. And what a tease that is if you're a Maple Leafs fan. You're up 2-0 in the series, then it gets to 2-2. Then you're down 3-2. You win a game six in the defending champs building in Florida. You go back to your building, and after a first period, which is pretty even, even though the Panthers had more shots than the Maple Leafs, I thought the Maple Leafs had four or five legit chances, and then they just got steamrolled the rest of the way. So that's pretty much what's cooking in the sports world now. But we start with the nugget that we got late Friday on the show, and we reacted to it. But now I want to take it the next step further. So when we were on the air on Friday, I think it was in the final hour of the show on Friday, we got a breaking news sound there at about like 5:15 or something like that, that Brock Purdy got pizzayed finally by the San Francisco 49ers. And now Brock Purdy's looking pretty awesome, and he's rocking out with his Brock out on a five-year contract worth $265 million. And if you are great at math, which is not me, that is $53 million a season for Mr. Brock Purdy. So my take immediately on Friday wasn't a crazy take, but the take was this, that there is no quarterback under more pressure in the NFL this season than Brock Purdy. Because Brock now has to show that he is worth that contract. Brock now needs to go from being Mr. Irrelevant to now stop only being considered as a good quarterback, which I don't even know if you could say right now Brock Purdy's a top 10 quarterback without a doubt in the NFL, but he's in that conversation of the back end of the top 10 conversation, probably just on the outside looking in. But Brock now needs to elevate himself from not only a good quarterback to a great quarterback. And remember, they trimmed a lot of the pieces of this team on the 49ers in order to set themselves up and get their ducks in a row to pay Brock Purdy. So now you have a lesser team on a team that has been a habitual contender, but this past season, the rug was kind of pulled out from underneath them. They suffered a lot of injuries. Now you have some players that are established and have done a lot of good things in San Francisco, no longer in the Bay Area. And now it's okay. You still have a very good team, but can you be a great team? And can you put yourself back into being a legitimate Super Bowl contender? Because I would say right now, if I ask you who are the two best teams in the NFC, I think the first two teams out of most people's mouths would be the Philadelphia Eagles and the Detroit Lions. Then if I say, who's the third best team in the NFC? If Philadelphia is off the board, if Detroit is off the board, Stu, just entertain me here, just for a fun exercise. Who's the third best team, in your opinion, in the NFC?
I would say the Rams.
Samter, do you go the Rams as well for the third best team in the NFC, or do you have somebody else?
No, I think that's fair.
Okay.
Maybe the Commanders.
Well, that's how I have it listed. Eagles 1, Lions 2, Rams 3. Then after that, I think there are three teams vying for the final two spots of the top five in the NFC. And those three teams that I have, in no order, Commanders, Vikings, and the aforementioned San Francisco 49ers. You just look around the rest of football. Bears, it's a lot of talk. I don't want to put the cart before the horse. The Packers have been good. Can the Green Bay Packers, though, take that next step? You look at the NFC South. Atlanta is very good, but I'm not going to say that they're a top five team in the NFC. Seattle, Arizona, no thank you. Dallas in the NFC East, no thank you as well. If you were looking at the top five teams in the NFC, there are six teams to me that I'm really considering for five spots. We've already given a spot to the Eagles, the Lions, and the Rams. So I have the Vikings, the 49ers, and the Commanders. And if I had to place those teams appropriately, and I think you're splitting hairs between all three of those teams, and you could argue, right, one team's four, and I could argue the team that you think is six could actually be four. But if I had to put spots four and five from, you know, pen to paper, this I would jot it down after I go Eagles 1, Lions 2, Rams 3. I would actually put the Minnesota Vikings in at four. I like what their defense has done the last few seasons since Brian Flores is taking it over. I know Kevin O'Connell's going to be able to produce an offense that is perfectly equipped for 2025. The star presence of the Minnesota Vikings, it pops off with Justin Jefferson. You have Jordan Addison. You have TJ Hockenson. The only concern I have, which is a big concern, is I don't know exactly what J.J. McCarthy is going to be. But when I look back at J.J. McCarthy's career at Michigan, he was basically asked to be a game manager behind a good offensive line and a good run game. J.J. McCarthy, though, didn't have wide receivers at Michigan like what he has right now in Minnesota. And do I think J.J. with his mobility, J.J. with the potential of the arm, when he's asked to do more, do I think he is capable of doing more? Absolutely. So I'm going to trust Kevin O'Connell finally calling his shot on a quarterback in the draft that this is going to work. So I put the Minnesota Vikings in at four. When I go to five, I'm going to put the Niners in there. So that puts the Commanders in at six. And here's the difference for me right now. The Commanders did obviously more last year. The Commanders, though, are they going to be last year's Houston Texans? We're heading into the season. We were like, oh, Houston's ready to take that next step. And I get it. Houston made the second round. The Commanders made the conference championship game. But is there going to be some regression where even if there's regression, look at what the Texans did last year. They weren't as sexy as we thought they were going to be in the regular season. You had C.J. Stroud take a slight step back, even though his wide receivers were banged up and his offensive line was abysmal. But they still, in the opening round of the playoffs, they beat the Chargers, and then they tapped out in the second round up against the Kansas City Chiefs where their offense wasn't all that. But I look at the Washington Commanders. Everyone's so positive about them because that was an organization that was down and out for so long, and they were embarrassing. They were pathetic, all because of one man and one man only, really, and that was that POS in Daniel Snyder. So he's out of the organization. You have Josh Harrison. You have Adam Peters running the show. You got a very good coach in Dan Quinn, and you have a legitimate, what we think, star quarterback in Jaden Daniels. But since the Commanders took that extra step or extra two steps in year one, it would not surprise me that even though they're still good and they'll have some sustainability this year, that they're just short of what the 49ers are. And I look at the 49ers. We ran through their schedule on Friday. They have the easiest schedule in the NFL. And I look at the San Francisco 49ers. They should be an 11 or 12 win team. And the Niners and Commanders, they're similar in this regard. They're not the best team in their division, right? The Eagles are the best team in the NFC East, and on paper, the Rams are the best team in the NFC West. But if I asked you, who's more likely to win their division this year? And I'd be curious what you guys have to say on the other side. Would you think it's more likely that the Commanders beat the Eagles for the division or the Niners beat the Rams for the division? What would your answer be to that, Samter?
I think it's more likely the Niners beat the Rams for the division.
I would agree. And I don't think there's been a bigger advocate for the Rams the last 2 years than me, with how they are just such a full complementary team, really not only on both sides of the ball, but all three phases of the game. Stu, would you agree with Samter and I's analysis?
I would, yes. I think it is the Niners.
Like, I look at this Niners schedule. Seahawks, Saints, Cardinals, Jaguars. The first four games of the season, yeah, you get two divisional games in there. And anything could happen in divisional games. But those first four games, at worst, they should be 3-1. At worst. Then they play the Rams. That's going to be a fun Thursday night early season game. Then they play the Bucks. Then they play the Falcons. Then they play the Texans. Like, that's a solid four-game stretch. Then after that, Giants, Rams, Cardinals, Panthers, Cleveland, Tennessee, Indianapolis, Chicago, and Seattle. The back end of that schedule, from November 16th and on, you could even say November 2nd and on. I know you have the Rams in there. There's a lot of teams that you look at that you're like, man, I'm not intimidated by. So if the 49ers can, I'm not even going to say do average. Like, let's say the 49ers have a kick-ass start to their season up against the Seahawks, the Saints, the Cardinals, the Jaguars, the Rams, Tampa Bay, Atlanta, and Houston. So those are eight games right there. You know, if they could be 6-2, let's just say 6-2, even if they're 5-3, to end the season, you know, in the second half with the Giants, the Rams, Rams are tough, Cardinals, Panthers, Cleveland, Tennessee, Indianapolis, Chicago, and Seattle. Like, you're looking at the final 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 games of the season. The toughest opponent are the Rams, and then after that, who's the next toughest opponent? Maybe at best the Bears, maybe at best the Seahawks, maybe at best the Cardinals. You know, that's a schedule that the Niners easily should be a double-digit win team. Now, I have not looked at the Commanders' schedule yet, so let's just do this. But you look at the Washington Commanders' schedule, where no one's sleeping on the Commanders this year. The Commanders' schedule is as followed. They play the Giants to open up the season. They play the Packers. They play the Raiders. They play the Falcons. They play the Chargers. They play the Bears. They play Dallas. Think here. Listen to this stretch. Kansas City, Seattle, Detroit. Then they play Miami, Denver, Minnesota, New York, and they end the season Philadelphia, Dallas, Philadelphia. Now, that's a tough schedule. And every schedule has some easy games on it. But you're looking at that schedule, I just think the Niners are going to be slightly better than the Commanders this year. I do. So I still think the Commanders could be a double-digit win team. The Commanders still should be a playoff team. But if I'm ranking the top five teams right now in the NFC and trying to figure out where the Niners are, I would say the Niners are fifth. I think you could argue that the Niners are as high as 4 or maybe even 3 if you like the Niners over the Rams in their division. I personally do not. So for me, it would be Eagles, Lions, Rams, easy, 1, 2, 3. Then it's okay, how do you rank the Commanders, Vikings, and 49ers? I would put the Vikings 4, the 49ers 5, and then the Commanders just on the outside looking in 5th. So if I had to give you my early, and I mean way premature, 7 teams in the postseason in the NFC. Well, Eagles will win the NFC East. The NFC North right now would go to the Lions. The South would go to the Falcons. The Rams would go to the West. Then the 3 wild card teams. So I told you I like Minnesota, and I told you I like the 49ers. You know what? It would probably be Vikings, 49ers, Commanders as your wild card teams. Because it would be Eagles, NFC East, Lions, NFC North, Falcons, NFC South, Rams, NFC West, and then the 3 wild card. Think about how deep the NFC is. You're talking about your wild card teams potentially being the Vikings, 49ers, and the Commanders. And I'll tell you this, one of those teams won't make it, right? Because there's always a team that you're not really talking about. And I think right now most people view the Vikings a playoff team, the 49ers a playoff team, the Commanders a playoff team. There's going to be one team that falls off. And I know the Niners missed the postseason last year, so you expect them to be much better this year in their schedule. If they don't have at least 10 wins, I'll be shocked. With the four, like, they should have 10 wins. Now, injuries could derail them like it did last year. But you're looking at the NFC right now. The NFC is deeper than the AFC. Like last year, we pointed out how they closed the gap. The AFC, if I had to give you my playoff teams in the AFC right now, AFC East, it would be the Bills. AFC North, I guess you got to give the edge to the Ravens. The South, it'd be the Texans. The Chiefs, it would be the West. After that, you're probably looking at what? Bengals make the playoffs, and that's not even a lock with their defense. After that, Chargers. You know, you could talk about the Broncos. I'm not ready to put the Pats in there, but some people are. You know, the Jaguars about to have a better, like the Steel. Like, you look at this, it's top heavy in the AFC where it's like, yeah, Chiefs, yeah, Bills, yeah, Ravens. And then sure, there's always a fear of the Bengals. But even so, those teams are not only trying to fight to win the conference, but in order to do that, they had to beat Kansas City, which none of those teams have been able to show an ability to do that in the postseason, outside of Cincinnati that one year. You look at the NFC, Eagles, Lions are kick-ass 1-2. Rams are a well-rounded team. And you look at the potential wild card teams, maybe I'm off on one of them. And maybe one of those three teams ends up in the wild card. That's not inconceivable. But then for your wild card teams, you have the possibility of Vikings, Bears, 49ers, Commanders. That's a heck, I mean a heck of a conference. And we thought the NFC was pretty weak the last 2-3 years. Last year, not only did the NFC close the gap, entering this season, I just think the NFC is just better from top to bottom than the AFC. So where do you rank the 49ers after paying Purdy in the NFC? I would say they're the fifth best team in the NFC. Eagles 1, Lions 2, Rams 3, easy peasy 1-2-3. Then it gets tough. I do put the Vikings 4, the 49ers 5th, and then the Commanders in at the 6th spot. What say you? 888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4476. We stay with the NFC. Nick Sirianni got a contract extension while we're on rankings. Where does he rank in terms of the top coaches in the NFL? Because he's been in Philadelphia for 4 years, playoffs in all four, 2 Super Bowl appearances, and 1 Lombardi Trophy. We talk about the booming resume and the booming ranking of one Nick Sirianni, my guy, when we come on back in 5 minutes on the Zach Gelb Show.
Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. T&Cs apply.
So let's just do this real quickly one more time. It is the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. I have one change to what I said in the open, as I was just quickly rattling through to illustrate the point that the NFC is better than the AFC. I still stand by that statement. I don't even think it's close right now. Obviously, everyone's hunting the Kansas City Chiefs, but the Eagles have already beat them. And you look at top to bottom, I think the NFC is better than the AFC. So if I had to make one change to what I just said, I would actually have the Bucs to beat the Falcons in the NFC South. But the point still stands true. If I had to pick you my 7 playoff teams of the AFC and 7 playoff teams of the NFC today, Eagles, Lions, Bucks, Rams would be your division winners in the NFC. Wild card teams would be Vikings, 49ers, Commanders. So the teams that would be out are Bears, Packers, Falcons, Cowboys. Now, if I did this for the AFC, Bills, Ravens, Texans, Chiefs, division winners, Bengals, Broncos, Chargers as your wild card teams. So those are all the same teams but one that made the playoffs last year that would make the playoffs again this year. The Bengals would be the omission. And then Jaguars, Pats, Steelers, Dolphins would be your teams under consideration outside looking in. Just look at the difference on the outside looking in teams that come up short in the NFC against the AFC. Bears, Packers, Falcons, Cowboys compared to the Jaguars, Patriots, Steelers, and Dolphins. But you look even at the wild cards. You could make a case Vikings, 49ers, Commanders would be tough outs in the playoffs. Bengals, if they get some sort of a defense, sure. Or is anyone scared of the Broncos or the Chargers come playoff time? I'm sorry, I'm not. And division winners, Eagles, Lions, Bucks, Rams. In the AFC, you have Bills, Ravens, Texans, Chiefs. All right. So Bills, Ravens, and Chiefs is a pretty bang-ass 3 out of 4. You know, pretty good job there, 3 out of 4. But Eagles, Lions, and Rams, man, that's tough as well. And I'd rather have the Bucs over the Texans, if I'm being honest. When you look at those 7 teams in the NFC and 7 teams in the AFC. And I could be wrong in some of the 7 that I'm giving you. So the pool out of being wrong are, all right, you swap out one and you put either the Bears, Packers, Falcons, Cowboys. And then let's say I'm wrong on one of the AFC and you have either what to choose from, the Jaguars, Pats, Steelers, Dolphins. Yeah. The NFC is better than the AFC. It's just the fear in the AFC of Mahomes. And then you just glance at the other teams in the AFC. It's really the Bills and the Ravens that you legitimately take seriously. But Lamar Jackson right now can't beat Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes in the postseason. And Josh Allen keeps on playing incredibly well, but his team can never beat the Chiefs. So even if the Ravens and Chiefs finally, or the Ravens and Bills finally punch through, I don't know, maybe the Bengals get some resemblance of a defense this year and they're back to being a team that scares the crap out of you. But even if the Bills and Ravens finally punch through, it's not a guarantee that they win the Super Bowl. Like, you go up against the Eagles, the Lions, you go up against the Rams, you go up against the 49ers. Man, the NFC has once again surpassed the AFC, where it's been an AFC league for a while. But the NFC has taken over the AFC once again, where the NFC is just a better conference, in my opinion. All right, talking about the NFC, how about the rise of Nick Sirianni? This time last year, I don't know if there was a coach under more pressure than Nick Sirianni, right? Because there are guys that are under pressure to keep their job or not. Like, we all walked into last year and we said, okay, Matt Eberflus, the leash is very short on him. But you look at someone with Nick Sirianni, even though there were some expectations for the Bears last year, what were those expectations? Maybe at best be a wild card team, right? And there's other teams like Doug Peterson. All right, yeah, he's on the hot seat. But were anyone sitting there saying that the Jaguars are going to be a force? So you look at, for example, Nick Sirianni last year. That was a team that you knew was good enough to get to a Super Bowl. But did they have the right coach? And I'll put my hand up. I thought with how a year ago ended, how they were off to a 10-1 start and they won one game down the stretch. And with the names that were available in the market last year, whether it was a Jim Harbaugh, whether it was a Mike Vrabel, right? You look around, Pete Carroll, who was also available too. You know, whoever the names were, there was one more name, I can't remember who it was that I kept on throwing out there. You had Ben Johnson too, as thought to be at the time. I think those were the 4 big names. But whoever the coaches were, you thought to yourself, okay, it's time to make a move. It's time, you know, go get Belichick. Go get Jim Harbaugh. You know, if you want to take a roll of the dice on a youngster in Ben Johnson, okay, go ahead. Pete Carroll, right? There were names that were available. And early on, it didn't look great for Nick Sirianni. You know, they choked that game to the Atlanta Falcons, which I still couldn't believe. You also had a game where they won up against Cleveland, but it wasn't pretty, and then he was jawing at the fans. There were a lot of reasons to doubt the Philadelphia Eagles early. And with how he was walked over in that locker room a year ago, a lot of people, including myself, didn't think he was going to be able to, with his back up against the wall, prevail and get the Eagles to a spot where you're like, okay, I believe in Sirianni. Well, Nick Sirianni proved this all wrong last year. And I'll be the first one to say it, I was wrong on Nick Sirianni. And you now look at the resume of Nick Sirianni from last year to this year. Well, this dude made the playoffs 4 times in his first 4 years as an NFL head coach. Year 1, let's be real, they had no business of making the playoffs. And they got to a wild card round, they lost to Tom Brady, successful season. Year 2, they took that next step, they got to a Super Bowl, they lost the Super Bowl, successful season. Year 3, they were one of the hottest teams in the NFL, they were 10-1, and then they were dog crap down the stretch. And they lost in the wild card round to Tampa Bay, unsuccessful season. But then in year 4, they won a championship. Obviously a successful season. So you're looking at a guy who, let's be real, most of us had not a damn clue who he was when he got hired by the Philadelphia Eagles. And in 4 years on the job, he has taken the team to the playoffs 4 years in a row, 2 Super Bowl appearances, and 1 Super Bowl championship with, oh yeah, by the way, he defeated the best player in the sport in the Super Bowl. You look back, right? Everyone's chasing right now the Kansas City Chiefs. There's only been 3 teams that have been able to knock out Kansas City when it matters. The Buccaneers, they had Brady. The Bengals, right, with them having Joe Burrow. And then the Eagles having Jalen Hurts. And I understand the Eagles have a heck of a team. Here's a little breaking news for you folks. You need to have a heck of a team to win a championship. And a lot of you going into this year would not even consider Jalen Hurts a top five quarterback. No one, if you would have told me last year that Nick Sirianni was a top five coach, everyone would have laughed at you. AJ Brown, Devontae Smith, dynamic 1-2 punch. But even the offense line, oh, how are they going to replace Jason Kelce? Yeah, they've done so flawlessly in replacing Jason Kelce. They haven't missed them. They have done a great job in the draft as well, getting Jalen Carter, right? Good offseason acquisition. Zach Bond went from a nobody to a defensive player of the year finalist. So this is an Eagles team that, yes, I know it's easy to just say, oh, they have so much talent. Oh, it's Howie Roseman. But this team went to bat for their coach. This team was annoyed with the way that their coach was being talked about. And today, as he was entering the final year of his contract, Nick Sirianni has agreed to a new contract with the Philadelphia Eagles. And I think everyone knew that this deal was going to get done. Right? Just how like everyone knew the Brock Purdy deal was going to get done. But for Brock Purdy, he still has to prove that he could win a championship. Nick Sirianni doesn't. Nick Sirianni has already won a championship. And now I think you advance the conversation one step further where do you rank Nick Sirianni in the NFL coaches? Like heading into this season. And if you had to say right now, I think it starts with him going as early as 3, which is like an unbelievable statement that I just said from where I thought he was as a coach this time last year. Clearly, Andy Reid's the best coach in football right now, who Nick Sirianni just abused in a Super Bowl for 60 minutes. Then I would say Sean McVay is 2, who, oh yeah, by the way, Nick Sirianni just beat Sean McVay in a playoff game. But those to me are without a doubt, without question, the 2 best coaches in football. Then you look around at who could be in the 3 spot and who could be the 3rd best coach in football. If I just went from division by division, no one else in the AFC East. Like, I like Vrabel. I can't say he's the 3rd best coach in the NFL. Vrabel, though, would be considered the 2nd best coach in the AFC East right now, right? I would say McDermott would be 1. So McDermott-Vrabel's a fun conversation. But I would give the slight edge to McDermott right now. But McDermott and Vrabel aren't getting the spot for the 3rd best spot in the NFL right now. AFC North. All right, you could talk about John Harbaugh. Zach Taylor enters the season on a hot seat. It ain't him. You want to mention Mike Tomlin? Well, Mike Tomlin hasn't won a playoff game since the 2016 season. It's been a long time. Like, going into this year, I do think Sirianni should be viewed as a better coach than John Harbaugh and then Mike Tomlin going into the NFL in 2025. You know, whether you want to put it on Harbaugh or not, and I think Lamar Jackson takes more of the criticism than Harbaugh easily, they've had a team that's been knocking on the door last few years. They haven't been able to get back to the Super Bowl. Sirianni's been to 2 with Wright, what people think is a lesser quarterback, and he's won a championship. You want to go in the AFC South. DeMeco Ryans is a heck of a coach. I wouldn't say, though, that DeMeco Ryans right now is better than Nick Sirianni. In the AFC West, hey, Sean Payton's definitely up there. Jim Harbaugh is definitely up there. You know, you look back at Sean Payton at the end in New Orleans, he had Drew Brees right there ready to go, and they couldn't get to a 2nd Super Bowl. So there's some questions there. You look in the NFC East, obviously it starts with Sirianni. Then after that, I would say, what, Dan Quinn right now is the 2nd best? Because, you know, you have Daboll and you got Schottenheimer. Then the NFC North, you got Dan Campbell, phenomenal coach. I love what Dan Campbell has turned that organization around. So Dan Campbell could be in that conversation. Matt LaFleur has done a solid job. Now he's got to have postseason success. So I don't think you can say Matt LaFleur is the 3rd best coach right now. O'Connell's done an incredible job, but now he's had 2 teams with incredible win totals in the regular season, and they both go out in their first playoff appearances, where you saw O'Connell lose to the Giants, and then you also saw O'Connell this past year lose a playoff game to the LA Rams. And then you know, Ben Johnson, it's way too early. Todd Bowles is underrated, but no one's going to say that he's the 3rd best coach in the NFL. You know, no one really else in the NFC South that you could jump up and down about right now. And the NFC West, yeah, Shanahan's in that 3rd conversation. Sirianni has beat Shanahan in an NFC championship game. Sirianni also has a Super Bowl. Shanahan does not. And, you know, I know we mentioned McVay already, all right, as being the second best coach in the NFL. I'm not saying Sirianni has to be three, right? Like, if you called in and you said Sean Payton is the third best coach in the NFL, I'm not going to call you an idiot, a moron, and a dope. If you say it's John Harbaugh or Jim Harbaugh, same conversation applies. But what Sirianni has done is he's put himself in a top five coach look, and even though he'll still have his detractors, all the dude's got to say is just look at my resume. Everyone thought I shouldn't have been the coach of the Eagles. Everyone thought I should have been fired after 3 years, which, by the way, playoffs with the Super Bowl appearance, and then when my back was up against the wall, when I was on the hot seat, yeah, look what I ended up doing. I ended up winning the Super Bowl. Let me just ask you guys this question right now. Samter and Stu, would you agree that Andy Reid and Sean McVay, like how I said it, how we said Eagles and Lions are the two best teams in the NFL, would you agree that Andy Reid and Sean McVay are also the first two coaches you think of as best coaches in the NFL?
Absolutely.
Who would then be your third? Because I don't know if there's a wrong answer here. Well, like, there could be a wrong answer. I don't know if there's a right answer here. I don't think you could really crush, if you have a brain and someone that's in the ballpark, anyone for the third spot that you want to make right now. So, Santa, who would be your third best coach in the NFL right now, or Stu, whoever's ready first?
I'm going to go with John Harbaugh.
Okay.
Just because, A, he has the title, and while they failed in the playoffs, I mean, it's consistent. Like with Tomlin, he's losing in the playoffs, and, you know, most seasons, 10 wins, 9 wins. Mm-hmm. Harbaugh and the Ravens, 12 wins, 13 wins, 14 wins, 1 seed, 2 seed. They're consistently good, switching from Flacco to Lamar, injuries with the running back, and no, whatever. He does an incredible job, yeah, no matter who his quarterback is. So I'm going to go John Harbaugh 3.
Yeah, and the only thing I would argue why I would take Sirianni right now going into this season is he's had a 2-time MVP, and the farthest they've gone at home is an AFC championship game where it wasn't like the Chiefs were doing anything special on offense and they couldn't find a way to get the job done. And there was a lot of coaching malpractice in that one. I didn't like the job that Monken did with Lamar Jackson in that game. And that ultimately falls on Harbaugh, even though he's not calling the plays. Stu, who would you say is the third best coach in football right now?
I hate to be the same, but the first one that came to my mind would be John Harbaugh.
Okay.
As the third. I might even put Jim fourth, to be honest, too. What he did in his first year coming back with the Chargers, not being in NFL for all those years, I think he has a case at number four.
If you tell me that I can't say Sirianni, I would actually maybe consider arguing two guys that I just think the coaching job is so impressive. What Dan Campbell has done with the Lions, down and out to a Super Bowl contender, I know they haven't won it yet, and this past year in the postseason, it was ugly. And then also, you know who I'm most optimistic about, where I did not like what he did in year one in Denver? And also, I was very impressed with what he did with Bo Nix this year. We thought that Broncos team could be a bottom five team in the NFL, and they made the playoffs. And I also don't think that team is great. If they go playoffs back-to-back seasons, I'm not saying it's winning a Super Bowl for Sean Payton, but that's a heck of a job for Sean Payton, who a lot of people are now starting to look at him. Yeah, very good coach, right? They were comparing him to McCarthy, and then they said, okay, the last few years he wasn't able to get the job done in New Orleans, was lost, like, just there without Drew Brees. And then in year one in Denver, that was really ugly with the way the Russell Wilson relationship just totally crashed and burned. He went unconventional, picking Bo Nix, and Bo Nix was, if it wasn't for Jaden Daniels, Bo Nix, I would say would be rookie of the year, but maybe it would have been Brock Bowers. But he was in that conversation, and they made the playoffs with a roster that was crap. Like, I love Harbaugh, right? Jim and John. With Jim, he has Justin Herbert, right? So making the playoffs, I know their roster isn't that great. It was impressive, but I don't think it was as impressive as what Sean Payton did. Like, if you throw those three coaches in there, John Harbaugh, Jim Harbaugh, Sean Payton, right? I don't think there's a wrong answer there. Is anyone, like, thoroughly impressed that the Ravens once again made the playoffs and once again lost in the playoffs? No. Like, I am impressed that Jim Harbaugh made the playoffs in year one with the Chargers, but it's more impressive what Sean did in year one with the Denver Broncos than what we just saw from Jim Harbaugh with the Chargers. All right, this is Zach Gelbsch on the Infinity Sports Network. When we come on back, Scottie Scheffler wins another major, Rory McIlroy embarrassed himself this weekend, and we get into another dust-up between Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark. Update time first. Here's Zach. All righty, it's time to ask the pros. You, the listener, get to ask us a question brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Simply tweet your question at INF Sportsnet or at Zach Gelb using the hashtag AskThePros. Be listening later in the show. We might answer your question. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts. So we opened up the show talking about where do the 49ers rank in the NFC landscape with the new Brock Purdy contract, 5 years, $265 million. Then we did discuss where Nick Sirianni ranks in terms of NFL coaches, and I think he should be in the top five coaching conversation, maybe even as high as three after Sirianni gets an extension. Now let's get to some other things that did happen over the weekend. So Scottie Scheffler wins another major championship, his first major championship that's not a green jacket at Augusta. He's won two at Augusta. Now he has a PGA championship. So you're still looking at the Open Championship and the U.S. Open. So he's two legs down in order to get, in order to find a way to go get four of those major championships. The Grand Slam, I guess, is the word that I'm looking for, which you just saw Rory McIlroy did. Here's what I'll say about Scotty. So obviously going into every one of these tournaments, he's either the favorite or he has the second best odds. He's a top three odds guy to win the championship outright and to win the major championship. Going into this one, I thought with how Quail Hollow plays that it was set up for Bryson DeChambeau to win. And Bryson DeChambeau was my pick. However, there hasn't really been a golfer since Tiger that you look at and you say there's a real fear factor of. Like, don't get me wrong, Phil was unbelievable. We know what Rory McIlroy has been capable of. He's got the career Grand Slam, just completed that at Augusta. But there's a different fear factor in the last few years with Scottie Scheffler. And I actually went to Long Island on Friday night, and I was looking at the leaderboard, and I saw that he was three strokes off the lead. And I said to my dad, I was just doing this as an exercise, because I knew who I was picking. I go, look at the leaderboard, and it wasn't at the time the most star-studded leaderboard in the top 10. I said, who do you think's going to win? And he goes, oh, easy, without a doubt, Scottie Scheffler. And I go, I agree with you. I thought it was inevitable on Friday, after the first 2 days, when he was five under and he was three off the lead, that he was going to win. And then we know the lead that he walked into on Sunday, and he even had some moments, you know, I don't want to say weakness, but vulnerability, where, oh, maybe this is going to be a race between him and John Rahm, and he still won the tournament, what, by five or six strokes? This dude, you just know he has the ability, when he shows up and he's in distance, he's probably going to win the whole thing. And now I wonder if he's going to win another major championship this year, because that would really be something. In the order that it's done, already having two green jackets, just won the PGA, if he could win either the U.S. Open or the Open Championship this year, then that's three legs down out of four for the career Grand Slam with how young he is in his career, only being 28 years old. The only thing that I'll say, and this has been the problem with golf, like, I tell you how, okay, he's maybe the most feared golfer since Tiger. But Tiger had this personality. Tiger had this aura. Tiger had this polarizing personality. Scottie Scheffler, it's just like, oh, he's a nice family man. Oh, he's very religious. Oh, he's very boring. I know last year, right, he got arrested. He would have been the last person I would have ever predicted on the tour to get arrested. And let's be real, him getting arrested, it wasn't anything that was like, ooh, it was so wrong what he did. It was a clear miscommunication with him and an officer while he was trying to get to a major championship, right? The PGA Championship last year. I think that was in Louisville. So Scotty, his dominance is the story. But I wish there was more of a flair there from a personality standpoint. I'll tell you, you know, he really dropped the ball, Rory McIlroy. Now, full disclosure, I am not a Rory fan. Maybe it was because when Tiger was down and out, Rory became that guy. I'm a huge Tiger fan. I have never been a fan of Rory McIlroy. But I'll tell you, the time I really respected Rory was actually when there was legitimate beef that we cared about between the tour and LIV Golf. And Rory kind of was the spokesperson for the PGA. But after that, Rory McIlroy just got paid, and it went from, oh, I like what Rory's doing, to all these LIV guys got all their money in their bag, and eventually, even though the LIV guys weren't telling you the truth why they took the money, they were trying to make it as a bigger cause and things like that. It was just the money was so ridiculous that it turned into, oh, Rory was given the benefit of the doubt to the PGA Tour, and they ended up burning him with this merger that we have no clue whatever came out of this merger. But the problem with Rory is it seems like he's a guy where he only wants the praise and he can't take the criticism. So they had to switch out his driver because his driver wasn't conforming. Not a big deal. Happens all the time. Rory got miffed, though, because that's supposed to be kept private. And I guess someone on SiriusXM PGA Radio got that news and released it. And I don't think it's a big deal. Like, listen up. This is Luke Kerr-Dineen on the Golf Digest explaining the whole situation. And you'll hear that it's not a big deal.
It's not a conspiracy or a cover-up to some crime. It's a normal thing that happens to players every single week. And it just happened to Rory McIlroy. Okay, so think about the tires on your car. The more you use them, the more they wear down until eventually they become unusable. The same thing happens with driver faces. The more golf balls you hit, the thinner the face gets. And the thinner the face gets, the further the golf ball goes until eventually it's deemed non-conforming. That's why every tournament randomly selects driver heads to test them for conformance. And this week, Rory's driver was deemed non-conforming, which is why he had to switch it out for an identical model. And this makes sense because players with higher ball speeds like Rory McIlroy tend to go through drivers a little quicker. So again, this is a normal routine thing and it's good for everyone because it ensures fair play across the entire field.
So Rory didn't really have a big issue here. But Rory not speaking to the media for the last 4 days at the PGA Championship and basically holding his nose up in the air, crying like a little baby and a snob, it makes it more of a story because it's like, what are you hiding? And I thought Jason Sobel had a great take. Quick take on Rory McIlroy not speaking to the media after any of the four rounds. Last year at Pebble, following his pre-tournament press conference, he stood with a group of reporters for some 45 minutes and spoke about the need for PGA Tour players to be more accessible. He'd recently been to an F1 race and saw how many interviews the drivers give, both directly before and after the races. There was some clarity, he told us, that golfers should hold themselves to a similar standard, especially the superstars. Personally, I've never been one to get annoyed if a player decides not to speak with us after a round. I don't need to hear from each player every day. If Rory elects to take a day or two off when he plays poorly, then that should be his prerogative. Tiger also did that, though, infrequently, but Tiger never went 4 tournament days without speaking afterwards. He knew that was his responsibility as a face of the game. Rory knows that too. In fact, he said it himself. It's like, you can't only want to have the publicity when things are going well for you. You just won the career Grand Slam. You just won a Masters Championship. You got that enormous monkey off the back. There's a little controversy that's not even controversy, and you threw gasoline on the fire because you wouldn't want to speak. Whether you're mad about the coverage or you're mad about the play, it's like, Rory, you can't tell people you want more coverage and then when a moment people want to talk to you, you end up being a coward and you don't talk to people.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around waiting for the track to dry is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire. Plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.